Dr. Kiberiga.
Thank you, Maria, for the nice introduction, especially for spelling my and pronouncing my last Ukrainian name. Thank you. Thanks a lot. And welcome to this symposium. Welcome to this presentation. When Maria first offered me to present at this symposium, my first thought was, well, we are not doing classical multivariate analysis. But then I realized that from my editorial experience for the agronomy journal that a lot of time we as agronomists are trained well how to analyze traditional experimental design like block, randomized block, and split plot. But often we stop at that point and never look at potential interaction or effect of other factors. But for me, because my primary audience are farmers, they're less concerned about the hypothesis testing, they're concerned more about the outcome. So my presentation is focused how we can sort effect of different factors and predictors in field experiments. Specifically, I'm gonna show you an example from so-called on-farm trials, which is a quite unique type of field experiments because they're relatively simple, but they allow us to collect more data, especially at different locations. And the second, I'll describe some of the procedure we adopted to deal with different factors in this type of analyzing this data, especially for using regression tree and penalized regression. And finally, I focus on how we can use this information and get better sense of different interaction by showing some example of using mixed effect, linear model, and hierarchical model example, especially with Bayesian flavor. And also, my focus will be to tell you specific tools, especially in R, which you can use to analyze similar type of data. So this is the plan of my game. The data I choose for this presentation is when we analyze this year, it's focused on one of the important insects in corn production. It's called corn root worm. These bugs are nice. You can see them often. But what they do, they lay eggs in the fall. The eggs hatches in May and June, and the larvae or worms feed on the corn roots and create a lot of damage. So often, we see lodging, we see yield losses. I have a personal issue with this guy. It's called a cucumber striped beetle. I live in Iowa and like to grow cucumbers. And what these guys do, they lay eggs inside cucumber flowers and they just die. Of course, I always like to spray, I don't want to spray, but my economic loss is not as big as farmers' losses in Iowa across Midwest, especially as more corn we've seen for the last 10 years. There are different ways to control this pest problem. One is rotation. The second, actually, by genetics. Seed companies develop new traits. These new corn traits have so-called BT traits, BT hybrids, which control these insects. But also with small corn on corn, the chemical way of controlling this insect is important too. So in this specific field experiments, we use one of the way to apply these insecticides. It's called SmartBox. And this is a unique way because it allows, it's closed. There is no exposure to human or other. It's applied during the planting, and the chemical we use, this insecticide, it's ASDEC 4.67G, which is, if you know something about insecticides, it's a combination of pyrethroid and phosphorganic. It's not systematic, it doesn't work, it doesn't get to the plant. So all of these trials were done by this type of technology. The location of these trials were across Iowa, but specifically we had 36 trials from 2006 through 2015. It's relatively large data sets, at least enough to publish in the Agronomy Journal. But we separated them by three different landforms. One is Des Moines Lobe, central part of Iowa. The second, northeast Iowa and southern Iowa. Those are different soil, those have different soil characteristics and climate. I mentioned the design of these experiments or trials are relatively simple. Just two treatments applied. Everything was applied by farmers. They use the technology, the smart, so there's control and treated. And a lot of these trials are done in many replication, like the whole fields were stripped by, so at least 4, 15, 20 replications, so a lot of data. And you may notice that we, by having this data across field, we can extract a lot of different information from soil types and so on. But the information that usually delivered to farmer focused on just comparison to treatments and so on. So this is just some of the example. A lot of times they're not randomized. Some of them randomized by mistake, but that's the way we do it. In this type of analysis, we always focus on yield response, and one of the reasons because it's easier to communicate to farmers, but also it's much easier to deal with different types of interaction, which I'll explain later. But this is what we saw from this data set. These are yield responses in kilogram per hectare by years. Definitely there is some effect of year. But the question is, especially from farmer perspective, what characteristic of specific years can explain this variability? So the two simple questions are, can we characterize this yield response? And then can we tell farmers when and where this specific chemical works? So in scientific language, what kind of interaction we can see, especially combining a lot of different variables? And previous speaker mentioned, definitely this is time where we have a lot of different variables. So we classify these variables by field level. You can call them external if you like, but we have information about planting dates, information about genetics, the previous crop, the rainfall. We have ability to collect spatial rainfall information from each this location. And here we are dealing with different types of monthly, cumulative monthly, growing, any type of combination we want to see, which this combination have effect on yield response. We also utilize the not just the total cumulative rainfall, but also the variability or evenness, and we use the idea of abundant and well-distributed rainfall, which is the product of rainfall and the diversity index. And then we also have temperature information for each of these location, maximum, minimum, daily, we estimated growing degree days and so on. So we work at least with 20, 25 different variables at the field level for these trials. Of course, because of these data in space, these are long strips, we have a lot of kind of proxy spatial information. And I believe some of you work with digital soil maps. We could extract a lot of information from digital soil maps, like from surrogate, like organic matter, pH, and we call them proxy because they're not really measured, but at least they give us some sense of variability. Clay, sand, silt, drainage clads, categorical slope. Also in Iowa, we have ability, we have a LIDAR data, which we can extract a lot of information from LIDAR, like slope, relative elevation, topographic index, and so on. And plus other information based on soil types. And in addition, some of these trials, we have either farmers or agronomists or interns going up and taking some scouting data, like root weight, root injury, and so on. So again, in this case, we are dealing with at least 50 different variables. And the question is, which one has effect, and what kind of interaction we can detect across these location and years. So now I want to describe you what kind of methodology and tools we develop by dealing with this data. First of all, when we look at this data, we would like to start with a simple idea of regression tree or tree models. How many of you use some type of tree models? Okay, cool. These are very popular, especially within the machine learning community. And why? Because they're relatively simple, not a lot of theory or statistic involved. They have clear picture, which I'll show you later. They're sometimes intuitive, which kind of mimic our thinking. And they're based on so-called binary recursive partitioning idea, which is if you have two variables, you try to split them to the end by different groups by minimizing sum of square error. So again, it's a relatively simple, very common in machine learning, but should give us some idea what's going on from the large big picture. In R, and we mostly use in R, we use two packages. One is PuTTY, definitely PuTTY. Who can miss PuTTY, right? PuTTY and RPart. Two packages for doing regression trees. The first one, it stops automatically by using some kind of hypothesis testing criteria. The second one, it requires some pruning, which I'll show you later, but it also uses cross-validation. Again, there are some other you can explore, but these are two which we prefer. And why? Because they have very nice visual assessment or visuals when you do this type of analysis. So here is. If we put all type of rainfall in one plot and see which rainfall has some effect on yield response across this data, this is the using a PuTTY package. Look at this. I believe this is very relatively cool. It gives us number of observation. It gives us percentage. And like in this case, you see that if the main rainfall was larger than 6 centimeters, the yield response was like this, 105. Relative, if it's less than 6 centimeters, the yield response was almost 700 kilo per hectare. So that's a big difference. And of course, it gives us a lot of stuff which we have to prune. But again, if you like to play with R, there are several cool packages which allow us to do this. And visuals are relatively nice. Compare that work 10 years ago when I used S or GGobi. Of course, we want to prune this data, and again, this is different between a PuTTY package and PART package. They didn't agree to some extent, but the idea was similar, that early season rainfall in May or June has a big effect on the response to these insecticides. So the less rainfall, the larger the response in both cases. And again, look at this. At least in my perspective, it has a nice visuals because it allows you to look at the variability and observation and even gives you some hypothesis testing idea if you want to test different categories. So okay, if you want to play with regression tree, try R and different packages. There are at least maybe 5-6, but these are two common we use. As Jose mentioned before, the key problem with multivariate analysis that we have a lot of different variables, and they, of course, correlate. This is just a simple example. We're interested in different types of cumulative rainfall, and definitely they correlate a lot, which creates the problem, especially for maximum likelihood and least square, for two reasons. One, that our standard error is either too large or too small, or it's very difficult to explain the relationship between variables. So we have to find some kind of way how to deal with this. Oops, sorry. And the way we ended up last year, we utilized the idea so-called penalized maximum likelihood. Now, it may sounds a little bit strange, but first of all, the likelihood is always a little bit confused in agronomic community, but if you have a data model or if you have a distribution, we have a parameters, they're fixed. By using these parameters, we can recover the data. So the distribution is fixed on parameters. In likelihood, everything is opposite. We have a data which are fixed, and then we see which parameters can maximize, how the model can get close to the data as possible. So it's an opposite way of looking at the things. Here the distribution, here the data model likelihood. Of course, we as statisticians like to get a log and optimize stuff, but what's about penalized regression, that we have the same likelihood, but then we add this penalized function. And this penalized function, it's a function of parameters, but it allows us to balance between the fit, because we can fit, we can have very complex model and have a perfect fit, or we can have a relatively simple model. So this lambda guy, and this is the shrinkage coefficient, it allows to balance between the fit and the simplicity of model. So the two most common penalized regressions are Ridge and Lasso. How many of you use this type of regressions? Okay, nice. The Lasso regression, this is where I first learned, has a nice properties in Bayesian, but the difference between these two is not big, except this square here. But what's important that Lasso, unlike Ridge, allows to select variables. It allows to be as a variable selection mechanism. And of course, Lasso stands for least absolute shrinkage selection operator. And if you want to look at the formula, it's the same as the sum of square error. But then we add this penalty here. Of course, no square. It's absolute parameters. And again, the shrinkage parameter, it allows to shrink the least important variables to zero. It actually kind of like kills. It kills these variables right away. So again, this is the basic idea of Lasso regression. The issue here is how we select where we stop, because it's a continuous process. There are several ways, and I'll show you just a moment. One way is to use degree of freedom, effective degree of freedom, and another we can use some kind of penalized criteria like AIC and other. But this is the key of Lasso. Also, Lasso, why it's so common in Bayesian statistics, because it's the prior has one of the common prior, which has a very sharp edges distribution. But anyway, this is the Lasso allows to select variables and how it does it. If I put all my rainfall, which is about maybe 15, 20 different combination in one pot, and then I utilize Lasso. So what it does, all of these guys here, they're zero. So this is just two, actually three ended up. And again, by selecting the lambda, the shrinkage coefficient by cross-validation, we can select where to cut this coefficient. But what it tells that if May or June rainfall, the coefficients are negative, so the higher the rainfall, less response to these insecticides. In R, it's easy done by GLM net package. It's very robust. One of the cool stuff about this package, everything, all variables are centered and scaled. But this is very important because often in multivariate analysis. So it's automatically, unless you want to do it. It can be done in GLM select. It does it cool too. But I think you have to define how you want to do it. So again, this is an example of Lasso. So all of these variables are killed here right away. Of course, I want to look at more variables. I can put a lot of variables here, and again, it gets more messy, but a lot of this stuff just shrinks to zero, except primary organic matter. Primary because these strips go through many salt types, so we select the primary one, which has the largest area. And of course, the May or June rainfall and cumulative growing degree on May 1st, which makes sense. But at least it gives us some sense what to focus in next more precise analysis like that. Of course, we don't stop here. We want to identify this interaction. And again, from farmer perspective, they want to know when and where. So we using different types of mixed effect, linear model and stuff like that. But this is the one, at least in this case, had sense. No equation here, no matrices, but here's the main effect of genetics, interaction between area and proxy soil organic matter, May rainfall, and the random effect of location. The location is random effect because we want to address those correlations between each fields, and this is the random intercept because we want to see different means for each location. And so on, the yield difference for replication and different trials. So we have a binary classification. But if you look at this model, and this is from R, it's easy to see that as the total random variance, about 15% is because of location. So it's not big, but still it's difficult to ignore. And again, the effect, the May rainfall negative, positive organic matter. In fact, as the organic matter increased, the response increased as well, which was a little bit puzzling for us. the difference between generic and so on. But this is the way usually we look at this stuff. What has changed in our community, at least, that there are a lot of different ways how to look at this visually. So now I want to show you how we can look at this visually. And the best package I like, it's called VizRec. I believe it was developed in Kentucky, if I'm not mistaken. But it allows us to look at these main and interactive effects in nice and very quick and nice way. So, for example, this is the effect of May rainfall. We see the negative slope. And by different landform area, central Iowa, Des Moines Lobe, northeastern Iowa, and southeastern Iowa. So we can see that the intercept for the Des Moines Lobe is much higher for some reasons. We can also look at the effect of traits. Remember that farmers can buy a single trait or multiple traits. Sometimes they call stack or non-stack. And this is an example where the single traits actually have higher response to insecticides, which makes sense. The seed companies are developing much better genetics which resist in damage of these bugs. The question is it enough to pay for a premium, which is I don't know now. But again, these R tools allows to show this different effect. Of course, interaction was very interesting, that there was interaction between landform area and organic matter. We know on main effect there was an increase as organic matter increased, but here actually it only increased in Des Moines Lobe and less in eastern Iowa South, but the data sets here are relatively limited. But anyway, what it tells that these are nice visual ways to look at this effect, especially in R. And you can do it on the fly without any type of plotting on the side. Of course, we've done that. We know what has effect in some sense, but it's very difficult to be precise in these interactions, as Jose mentioned. And we want to know more. We want to know how this, for example, organic matter affect within each field. And the problem is that a lot of time we don't have enough points in each field to establish this relationship. That's why the idea of hierarchical models comes into place, and it's an extension of linear mixed model. And as Jose mentioned, here we don't have any type of, well, I call it random, but in fact they're not random. But we can develop the whole distribution for all of these effects. And the idea is that we put priors on these parameters, and these priors are learned from data. And of course, the critical part is to select these priors. It's probably not easy always, but sometimes you can select them by default. So in this case, we have normal for means and Gauchy for variances or deviation. And again, the idea is to get better estimate of these random effects, especially for organic matter and so on. So we know that even with limited data, we want to know what's the effect of this organic matter within each field. So that's the whole value of this hierarchical normal model. I want to mention again that it's the same idea as the linear mixed effect model, but here we have a more control how we can use those priors, and it allows us to better borrow information from one field to another. Essentially, the fields which has less variability are pooled more compared to those fields that had more variability by using this type of analysis. The problem is how to do it. There are several ways in R and, of course, in SAS. My favorite one is to use STEN. How many of you use STEN, R STEN? Okay. It was developed in Columbia University, very robust. It allows to use a lot of different types of Bayesian models. It's still based on Monte Carlo Markov change in mode simulation, but it uses this fancy Hamiltonian sampling, which is relatively good. It may be slow, but it's good. So anyway, STEN allows to fit a lot of different models, Bayesian models, except some spatial. But the alternative is to use JAG. How many use JAG? JAG also good. But so here's the idea, how we can get this interaction. So by looking specifically for organic matter, and again, some of these fields didn't have a lot of observation in each field. That's why we wanted to borrow this information from one side to another. So this is what it stands as, and interesting, these are so-called 50% high density credible interval. By default, they are 50%, which is kind of interesting, but you can see that, some of these effects for organic matter are actually positive. So if organic matter increased, the response for this chemical increased as well. Of course, there is a lot of noise either, but this is one of the way how to look better at these effects across different fields. Another step, we can sort these slope effects. So essentially, it's a random slope. And then see for 90% confidence interval or credible interval and see what percentage of these sites organic matter had real effect. And you can see it's about maybe one third. So, yep, there is some effect. And the next step, we want to know when these effects happen, at what conditions. And again, what we've done, we plotted against May rainfall and these random slopes for the organic matter. And what you see that when rainfall was below normal, the effect of organic matter was much higher. So again, there was interaction between organic matter and the May rainfall across all of this field. Of course, in general, there is a lot of noise. A lot of them just zero. But this is, again, this is one of the way how we can go beyond of traditional analysis. And finally, my final words are that never stop at analyzing your data by using design analysis. Go beyond. Look at different interaction. Always scale or normalize your data. Utilize different multivariate techniques. When I was in graduate school and wanted to take the multivariate analysis, my committee told me, well, it's not useful. It's only exploratory analysis. But it's even if exploratory, it allows you to get a lot of different stuff. And always balance your agronomic sense and statistic. Definitely statistic can lead you to a lot of different ways, but always balance your agronomic sense and consult with others. And finally, we are working with Iowa State University on developing so-called spatial Bayesian model, which allows to select these significant factors from spatial data, and so on. Well, thank you, and that's hopefully useful.